Welcome to the Natural Super Kids podcast, where you will discover practical strategies to inspire you to boost the health and nutrition of your kids. I'm Jessica Donovan, a qualified naturopath specializing in kids' health, and I want to make it as easy as possible for you to raise healthy and happy kids. Let's get into it. Hello and welcome back to the Natural Super Kids podcast. Today I am joined again by our Natural Super Kids naturopath, Sarah Warboys. Hi, Sarah.
Hey, Jess. Nice to be here.
So good to have you back. It's been a little while since we've recorded a podcast together, and we thought we would do a bit of a mini series on sleep, because Sarah was sharing with me some great results she's been getting recently with clients on sleep. So we're focusing on sleep today, a bit of an overview of our naturopathic approach to sleep, particularly in children and babies. But this is really going to be helpful for adults as well. So before we get stuck into the information, do you want to just share a little bit about yourself, just in case there are some listeners that may not have heard you on the podcast before?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm a mum of three. Definitely been sleep deprived in the last 18 years, probably for the first 10 years of our life with kids. I think my first two kids didn't sleep great. My third was probably the best out of all of them. And yeah, sleep, it's just one of, I really need sleep to function well and just for my mood, really. But I think it's one thing in clinic I see a lot of, and it's something that a lot of people come to see me for. And I just love it when mums come back or dads and say, we've never had better sleep in our child's whole life. And it's just such a win, because everybody benefits. The child's happier, mum and dad are sleeping, the general mood in the house just lifts. So I think it's probably one of my favorite things to treat.
Yes, I love that. And it's so true. Like, if just one person in the household isn't sleeping well, particularly if it's kids that need support to get back to sleep, it really does affect everyone's well-being. So I love that we're diving into this topic. So let's start with some of, you know, some basic information that parents might find it interesting to know about sleep. And we'll go from there.
Awesome. So I think we all know when we don't sleep well, because our mood's affected, we can't think as well as we'd like to, our nervous system feels a little bit shaken, and sleep is absolutely essential for overall health. It supports our kids, their physiological and mental health. It maintains our brain, heart, and immune function. And then our memory consolidation and just that restoration of brain function. So really important, I guess, especially when kids are at school, for their focus during the day, their ability to remember, I mean, and like I said, just their overall health. And sleep is that time where our bodies repair and rejuvenate. So absolutely essential for health.
Yeah, definitely. And I know I am, you know, I'm a grump when I don't get enough sleep. And, you know, I think all parents know how hard those days are, or those weeks, or those months, or sometimes even years where their kids aren't sleeping well. Like, it really does, you know, have that, you know, negative overall effect on their well-being. So can we talk a little bit about, I think this is a question we get often, about how much sleep do kids need?
Yeah, and that's really individual, I guess, like everything else. But there is a rough guideline for children, and that's somewhere between 9 and 12 hours. Sometimes I hear parents say, I just feel like they're not getting enough. So, and that may be half an hour or an hour, but it's often within that range, I think. And then adolescence is around a minimum of 9 hours, and then adults are sort of between 7 to 8 hours, but that's also very individual, and how we function and how much sleep we need to function.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it? And I think, you know, for parents going with that gut feeling, you know when your kids are feeling like they haven't had enough sleep. Because I know my son, for example, he's 16 now, but he does need a lot of sleep. He's always needed a lot of sleep, even when he was a toddler. Like, he had his day naps for longer than a lot of the other kids were. I remember feeling anxious that he was going to kindy, you know, when he was 4, because I'm like, how's he going to do without his afternoon sleep? Like, he was still sleeping fairly regularly now. And now as a teenager, he still, you know, he would hate to admit this, but he still needs a lot of sleep. So, yeah, I agree. It is really individual. So it's really listening to that intuition as a parent about how much your kids need, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And if they're off during the day, they're irritable, or, you know, just generally feeling on edge, or you're walking on eggshells around them, that can be a sign that they're not getting enough, or that they're having disturbed sleep, so not enough restful sleep.
Yeah, that's another good point. Just because they're asleep for a certain amount of hours doesn't mean that quality of sleep is there. So what about, the stages of sleep? Can you sort of just quickly run us through that?
Yeah, so there's different stages. I think they just grade them from like 1 to 4, and then there's the rapid eye movement. So there's also the deep sleep. Sometimes kids wake up a lot at night, which would be disrupting those stages. But it really is about having consistently staying asleep, even though those sleep stages are like various states of consciousness.
Yeah. Yeah. So when kids are waking a lot, they might not be getting, you know, through all of those stages, because then they're starting back at the start again, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
so that's, I think, an important consideration as well. So as naturopaths, like, we always like to dig below the surface, you know, and not just, for example, prescribe, you know, a straight magnesium or something else just because kids aren't sleeping. We like to dig below the surface and really determine what might be going on. What are some of those underlying factors in a particular baby or child in terms of the sleep issues that they might be having? So what are some of the common causes that you find in when working with clients that are causing, you know, these sleep issues in kids?
Yeah, I guess, well, one of the most common things I see, because I see a lot of kids with enlarged tonsils and adenoids, blocking of their airways can really impact their sleep quality. So, and even sort of extending, like, at its extreme end to sleep apnea, so stopping breathing and then waking up. That's something that you would really want to address. Definitely support them, their nervous systems, and support their sleep, but addressing that dysfunction as well. Like, oral function in general, even without enlarged tonsils or adenoids, so mouth breathing can impact their quality of sleep. Skin conditions like eczema, I find, really aggravates kids in their sleep because of itchiness, really, and they're just generally a bit uncomfortable and irritated. Food intolerances and like gut disturbance, dysfunction can, in babies, that's really quite obvious because they'll often wake up in obvious discomfort, farting, in pain, doing all those screaming, crying. In older kids, it can just lead to sort of just waking up things like constipation, those underlying gut issues can affect the quality of sleep. And then there's things like, you know, anxiety, daytime stress, stress levels that really impact the quality of sleep, can make waking up at night aggravate that, so waking up more at night. And then that's a bit of a vicious cycle in itself, because we need restorative sleep to really support our mental health and, you know, reduce stress and anxiety. So that one in particular is a bit of a cycle that we can address from both ends.
Yeah, so true, isn't it? You know, that anxious mind is going to wake up and then start, you know, start with those perpetuating anxious thoughts, and then, yeah, then the anxiety can get worse. So it ends up with that, yeah, negative cycle. So many good points there. I totally agree. And, you know, we did a really popular podcast series on the enlarged tonsils and adenoids, something that I always ask our club members when I'm answering questions in the membership about, you know, sleep issues, is, you know, bringing their attention to oral function, and whether they're mouth breathing or, you know, have any known issues, and, you know, recommending that they get assessed, you know, if there's no other kind of obvious causes as well. So that's, yeah, a really good one to keep in mind. But I'll make sure the links to the tonsils and adenoids series that we did are in the show notes for anyone who's interested in learning more about that. So let's move to like sleep specific neurotransmitters. So for anyone that isn't aware, neurotransmitters are basically our brain chemicals, and they really are the foundation of our sleep. They control how well we get to sleep or fall asleep, how well we stay asleep, you know, that whole sleep wake cycle, how well we feel in the morning when we wake up even. So can you run us through some of the key neurotransmitters that are involved in sleep, as well as some of the signs that these particular neurotransmitters may be out of balance?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, like you said, Jess, they do, like, there's like stimulating neurotransmitters and neurotransmitters that are calming. One of the first ones is adenosine. So adenosine by itself actually is involved in sleep initiation. I really love this one because it's relevant to me and people who consume caffeine. So caffeine actually blocks the uptake of adenosine, which is why the main reason why caffeine makes us feel alert and awake. But when we're deficient in adenosine, some of the deficiency signs are anxiety, irritability, overactive mind, kind of like too much caffeine.
Yes.
Picture, and insomnia and not being able to get to sleep. And so you'd be looking for that one in particular to support adenosine function and like manufacture in the body. Nutrients like magnesium and glycine are really helpful. And then also, you know, most kids I see aren't having any caffeine in their diet, but that could be something in a mum who's breastfeeding and who is consuming tea, coffee, kombucha, other caffeinated drinks. And something to look out for in kids, you know, tea has caffeine, if that's something you consume as a family, or even kombucha, because that's made on tea, contains caffeine as well. So just that would be something just to be mindful of if some of those symptoms are present for you or your child.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add there, a lot of teenagers are drinking caffeine as well. I know, you know, within the iced coffees and like cartons, you know, as well as all the sugar that's included in those. So, that's something to be aware of if you've got older kids, you know, when you don't have full control or you're not sure exactly what they might be drinking. I mean, some school canteens.
And those energy drinks as well.
Yes, that's such a good point as well. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so that's adenosine. And then, yeah, what other neurotransmitters?
So there's GABA. That is like it's actually an amino acid, but it functions like a neurotransmitter, and it's another calming neurotransmitter, and it helps in sleep maintenance. So it just works by reducing the excitability of the neurons, and some of the deficiency signs are similar to the previous ones on adenosine, like anxiety, panic attacks, insomnia, palpitations. It's sort of like that, cold or clammy hands, that sympathetic nervous system response. And ways to, I'm going to talk about this down below, like there's a dietary source of GABA that you can include in your diet, but nutrients that help would support the production of GABA in your body is zinc, taurine, and glutamine. We'll talk more about diet in a minute.
Yeah, but it's good to know that those, you know, specific nutrients are, you know, supporting these specific neurotransmitters. Like I think that's just highlights the importance of nutrition in sleep, which, as you said, we'll be talking about, a bit later on. And I think you've got a couple of other neurotransmitters that you wanted to talk about as well.
So there's also acetylcholine as well, and that's helful in promoting REM sleep. And you might be deficient in this one if you're having light sleep, waking up a lot at night, or if you're feeling particularly more reactive to stress or prone to stress. So, yeah, it helps with sleep maintenance specifically. And, yeah, amino acids again in there, helpful, acetyl L-carnitine as well, and fish omega-3 oils are really helpful, and B vitamins in this one, in producing this one in the body.
Yeah.
And then there's melatonin, which is for another episode, but melatonin's not a neurotransmitter, but it acts like a neurotransmitter in the body, but we've got lots to talk about that on another
episode. we decided we would do a dedicated episode to melatonin. We get a lot of questions about melatonin, and there's a lot to kind of talk about when it comes to melatonin. I mean, I think it is the key kind of brain chemical that we think of when we're talking about sleep. So we wanted to save that for another episode. And I just want to say, if you're feeling a bit like, which of these neurotransmitters may I be deficient in, or may my child be deficient in, and what nutrients should I be taking out of the ones that Sarah's sort of listing off to support that, I guess this really does illustrate why it's really helpful to get support from a practitioner like you, who has some really great results with sleep, because it takes that thinking away from parents. So don't feel like you've got to work this all out yourself. This is just kind of, helpful to make you aware that, nutrition and naturopathy, we have a lot of tools in our tool belt that can help with supporting sleep in so many different ways. Talking about, there's lots that can be done.
Yeah, and it's often a combination, and I wouldn't necessarily prescribe, for example, GABA to a child who's showing those symptoms. I would probably, look at diet first, look at gut function, because they're all what's underneath the inability to make their own GABA. So that's where we would start most likely.
And that's another great example of how we're digging deep to figure out what might be going on, but then supporting that with, starting off with really simple kind of, diet and lifestyle changes to see how we can, improve things before moving on to particular nutrients that can be supportive as well. Yeah. All right. So diet, we've talked a bit already about, the importance of diet and different, how it can impact sleep. So let's discuss that a little bit more.
Yeah, there's actually been a lot of research on diet and sleep and in different diets. So breaking down the macronutrients, the carbohydrates, the fatty acids, the protein. And what they've found that like a high GI diet spikes blood insulin, and then they're not exactly sure of the mechanism. It may be due to inflammation or something to do with tryptophan, which I'll talk about in a minute, but it disrupts the body's autonomic nervous system and then affects sleep. And it is actually a really common thing I'll see in clinic. Kids will present with disrupted sleep, moodiness, and then I'll also see this daytime picture of constantly asking for snacks, constantly hungry, you know, having lots of crackers, bread, fruit, just that high carbohydrate diet all during the day. And they do go together. So it's a really important component. So having carbohydrates that are the complex carbohydrates, whole grains, that really, yeah, it's, I like having a greater understanding, because we often talk about, you know, we need to eat more whole grains, have a whole food diet, but this is actually how it affects sleep, and why it's important to make those switches in your diet towards that more complex carbohydrate intake.
Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense when you think about it. You know, if you're getting fluctuations in your blood sugar levels, you know, throughout the night because you are eating those high glycemic index foods, the high carbohydrate foods, the high refined carbohydrate foods, particularly in sugars, then it makes sense that that's going to disrupt your sleep rhythm.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then there's the fatty acids. So I found this really great study that they did on children, and it was associating higher blood DHA levels, which is a component of omega-3 fatty acids, and that they were associated with improved sleep. And so what they found was in the treatment group versus the non-treatment group, it increased their sleep duration by 58 minutes, and there were fewer and shorter night wakings in the treatment group. So that was, I'll just give the dose because I think it gives people some context as well and how long they might need to take something for to see results. So this study was 600 milligrams a day of DHA and went for 16 weeks. So they would have done the full assessment at the end of that 16 weeks. That's a pretty amazing result, I think. Like, you know, almost an hour extra of sleep and less waking up just by increasing DHA.
That's amazing. And I'm sure there's lots of parents out there thinking, yes, if my kids could sleep another hour, sleep in for another hour in the morning, like that would be amazing. Yeah. And just to clarify, like that would be 600 milligrams of DHA, not 600 milligrams of omega-3. Yeah. So DHA, as Sarah said,
is a component,
of the omega-3. So that's really important because, you know, the cheaper, more sort of commercial, I guess, fish oils, you know, don't always have good levels of DHA. So it's really important if you're looking at giving an omega-3 supplement, you know, for better sleep, to make sure it's got that high concentration of DHA in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the practitioner products generally have, well, you can read the label, but they're high DHA, the ones we recommend.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, such an interesting study.
Yeah. And then there's proteins. And, you know, another reason why we recommend having adequate protein, you know, starting the day with breakfast. This was based on another study I found. And I love that they were on children as well. I mean, we focus on children, but it's really relevant. So this particular study was done in Japan, and they found that increasing tryptophan-containing foods. So tryptophan's an amino acid, and it's a precursor to serotonin. So what they found was having high tryptophan-containing foods at breakfast was supporting of children keeping their circadian rhythm and maintaining sleep quality. And so the foods containing tryptophan, they're mostly found in animal products. So red meat, poultry, turkey, I know is one, as well as dairy. But it's also high in nuts and seeds and whole grains and legumes. So another reason to have a diet that's diverse and broad and, you know, whole food based.
Yeah, and you know, there's that I guess reputation that turkey, you know, makes you sleepy after a big turkey meal, and that's, you know, one of the reasons, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And then there's GABA. So we just talked about GABA before being that amino acid neurotransmitter like molecule, and so that helps promote sleep. And fermented foods, lactic acid fermented foods, have increased levels of GABA. So I didn't know that until yesterday, and I love that. So another reason to increase fermented foods daily in our diet, you know, sauerkraut, sourdough, all those beautiful yogurts if you can tolerate dairy. Yeah, including those in our daily diet as well.
Yes, and we've talked about, you know, we talk a lot about gut health, and, you know, I talk about fermented foods a lot on this podcast, you know, in terms of it being good for gut health. But that, as you said, another reason to add more of those fermented foods into our family's diet. Yep. I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's very cool.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, so so that's diet. Was there anything else you wanted to share on diet before we move into to lifestyle factors?
Yeah, I mean, just sort of elaborating on like the Mediterranean style diet. I think it's probably one of the most studied diets, but they have linked that with better sleep. And that is, you know, just what we were talking about. Fruits, nuts, whole grains, fish, olive oil, polyphenol-rich foods, which are, you know, your red, purple, blue colored foods, raspberries, blueberries, blackberries, red grapes, and then having, you know, smaller amounts of dairy, poultry, and red meat. So just a very rich plant-based diet, then with smaller amounts of the protein, which is the Mediterranean style diet.
Yes, I love that. And I've been doing quite a bit of reading on neuroinflammation, so inflammation of the brain and nervous system, and how that, you know, hugely impacts, well, when it comes to kids, like mood, sleep and behavior, but also like the long-term effects of, you know, ongoing neuroinflammation, you know, in terms of those, you know, Alzheimer's and Parkinson's diseases that are we're seeing. Yeah. So prevalent later on in life, and you know, a lot of that information comes back to the Mediterranean diet being a really good way to keep that neuroinflammation in check. So, just wanted to add that.
And I think that's maybe where DHA is linked into that as well, just reducing that neuroinflammation.
That would make a lot of sense, wouldn't it? Yes. Okay, so what about lifestyle factors?
So, there's a lot to cover there. whole food-based diet, and I guess just briefly touching on that being exposed to light, morning light, and how it sets our circadian rhythm. Movement is really important, especially for all humans, but little people need, you know, they need a good 2 to 3 hours a day of physical activity and movement. sometimes I do hear parents say, you know, if my son, child, daughter doesn't get enough physical activity, they just really struggle to fall asleep at night. Yeah. Screen time and telly, that's linked to light as well, artificial light. So really minimizing or eliminating that in those few hours before bedtime, and then, you know, addressing stress, daytime stress, for ourselves, like looking at sort of, you know, our household nervous systems and our own stress levels, and working towards reducing those and regulating our own nervous system so that we can help our kids and be connected with our kids.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like each of those points could be a dedicated podcast episode. There's a lot
definitely
to go
into, yeah,
in all there of is those. Yeah. Yeah, and we're going to be talking more about that that morning light exposure and the screen light exposure in the next episode that we're going to be diving into melatonin. But yeah, I agree. Like, you know, it comes back to basics, doesn't it? You know, movement, getting outside, trying to manage stress within the household are all going to be beneficial for our kids' sleep. All right. So I know we've covered a lot today. And, you know, as we talked about, really like digging deep and determining the underlying cause of a particular child's or person's, you know, sleep issues is really important. But I thought we could finish up with you just sharing some of your top tips to kind of summarize general top tips for better sleep for families.
Yeah, I think my number one top tip would be to introduce that protein-rich diet for breakfast. So a lot of kids I see, and a lot of kids in general, eating cereal and milk for breakfast. I would just really encourage you to make a switch towards a higher protein breakfast. Eggs, could even be leftovers, smoothies with some extra protein in it, including nuts and seeds, a common brekkie at home. We have French toast, like that's got some egg in it, or a smoothie with some protein powder and yogurt. They're probably our brekkies that we alternate in between. I reckon that would be my number one top tip. And then sometimes, you know, like you just mentioned, like making all those shifts is really can be a little bit overwhelming. But even working towards reducing bedtime by 30 minutes, you know, at a time over a few weeks. So just sort of setting a goal to reduce the light time, nighttime lights, take away the screens, and just work towards bringing bedtime a little bit earlier. And then, you know, if there are underlying factors, allergies, eczema, food intolerances, disrupted airways and oral function, then just investigating that to really support their whole body and get to the underlying cause of the sleep disturbance.
Yeah, I love those tips. And, you know, like this episode has illustrated, there's a lot to look into. And if you're feeling overwhelmed, I really love the, you know, the breaking that down of that protein at breakfast time, you know, remembering that movement throughout the day, you know, addressing those underlying factors that could be contributing as well. And like I said, in the next episode, we're going to be talking more about the light and the screens, which, you know, Sarah and I have both got teenagers, so we're right there with you in the struggle. I know I certainly am, yeah, keeping the teens off of their screens in the evenings. So yeah, we'll be talking more about that in the next episode. I did just think about a free resource we have for people that I wanted to mention. We've got a 3 breakfast recipes to improve your kids' mood, sleep, and behavior little ebook. So I will make sure the link to that is in the show notes. If you're kind of stuck in that cereal rut or toast rut for breakfast, you know, these 3 breakfast recipes, they're simple. Can really help you start to get out of that rut and start to improve your kids' sleep. But also just letting you know, we are here to help. Sarah sees clients online, so it's nice and convenient no matter where you are in Australia or even elsewhere in the world. You can book an appointment with Sarah via our website over at naturalsuperkids.com. We'll make sure that specific booking link with all of the information is in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining me, Sarah.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks, Jess.
It was great to have you guys listening in today. And as always, if you have any questions or wanted to reach out, you can come over and find us on Instagram at Natural Super Kids. Send us a message. We're happy to kind of have a conversation with you there. See you later. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. Head on over to our website, naturalsuperkids.com, for the show notes for this episode, as well as a whole heap of inspiration to help you raise healthy and happy kids. I'll see you next week.